Good evening and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Elise Matatal, and a few weeks ago I had the pleasure of speaking with Jade Kelly. She's the president of CWA 7799, Communication Workers of America, a national public service union that represents over 100,000 public workers across the nation. We spoke about queer liberation, the history of labor organizing in the U.S., and how the movement is growing and changing. Thanks for meeting with me. Before we dive in, do you want to share your name, pronouns, some of the hats you wear in the community?
My name is Jade Kelly. I use pronouns she, her, or they, them. I am a CU Boulder University staff member, been working here for the last 8 years, and also president of CWA Local 7799. It's a member-led labor union, and we started with UCW Colorado, my union, which is a Walla Walla union for faculty, staff, and students at CU at all four campuses, and quickly added five other unions at Denver Health, also wall to wall, at UC Health across every office statewide, Denver Public Library Workers United, Denver Public Libraries, the Defenders Union of Colorado at the Colorado Public State Public Defender's Office, and then our newest union, Pikes Peak Library Workers United, down in Colorado Springs for Pikes Peak Library Workers. So it is a lot of different folks, but it has been a honor to be serving in that role and do our best to really advance labor rights, especially for those in the public service.
Before we dive into sort of all the things that are happening and things you've been moving and shaking on, I'm curious how you got into labor organizing.
It was a necessity. It was unfortunately really evident to me that at CU, we have not had any real workplace democracy, despite the fact that CU is founded on this concept of shared governance. So at CU, at least, we have things like faculty assembly, we have staff council, we have student government, but that only goes so far. And I was actually serving as chair of staff council during March of 2020 when the pandemic hit. And overnight, we saw some really horrifying actions taken by our employer. Thousands of layoffs overnight without any recourse, despite, you know, stark opposition from us, forcing folks to go back onto campus without any sort of PPE or knowledge of exactly what was they were putting at risk by going onto campus. Quick erasure of, you know, hazard pay, things that had been, you know, pre-established labor norms for decades and decades. And it was evident that that shared governance was only when there was agreement between us and our bosses. And when there was an instance or a systemic issue that we really needed to address, which there are a ton, especially in higher education, in public institutions that are funded in our state. If we needed to get a yes when our boss said a no, there was nothing that we could do. And so there was really the need for a labor union at CU. There was a graduate student union at the time called the CRC, the Committee on Rights and Compensation. And I approached them about potentially starting a wall-to-wall model, something that I had been seeing throughout mostly the South in what was called United Campus Workers. So there is a United Campus Workers, Georgia, Virginia, Tennessee, in a lot of right-to-work states where we don't have the same labor rights protections that exist in a lot of other states and communities. And they were organizing on campus in this wall-to-wall format to get the density to really make a meaningful change in our working conditions. Because as we've seen, there are a lot of different ways to do that. And I think this new model of labor organizing has really shown that even in states where there is stark opposition to us organizing, and that can really, you know, put us a threat, that density, that solidarity, that, you know, collective mass can be really powerful and moving the boss from that no to a yes. And so we started discussing about it. I think one of the first initiations was a op-ed between myself and the president of the CRC at the time, Janet Rupert. And we started discussing with CWA to have a United Campus Workers Colorado here, and opening it up to faculty, students, staff, anyone with a paycheck here at CU, and really building a new model of organizing. And so that was something that I saw as something that was not as, you know, optional at that point, something that was, you know, really threatening not only my own job position, but all of my coworkers, all everyone that I cared about that I saw on a daily basis, cared about the students that I was working to serve, because I saw routinely that my working conditions were their learning conditions. And the more precarious of a position that I was put in, the smaller my paycheck became, especially with inflation, the more my health and emotional safety was put at risk, the worse their situation became, and the more that our university was forced to honestly rely on treating them like customers. We've seen rises in tuition and student fees, and a decrease in state public financing. And especially since getting involved in the labor union, we've been there at the state legislature advocating for increases in state funding for our own institutions. And sometimes it feels like we're alone, despite our, you know, institutions having quite successful lobbying efforts of their own. They don't seem to be taking that avenue in terms of how best to address some of these systemic concerns. So I got into labor organizing because of a necessity, and one that was, unfortunately, I was at a breaking point of either quitting or staying and trying to organize and making this public institution that I cared so deeply for work for not only myself, but all of my coworkers and for the state of Colorado.
I'm curious, you mentioned little bits and pieces, but what are some of the successes and challenges you've had over the past year, or if you want to go farther, because it sounds like the pandemic has been a lot of your organizing time.
Yeah, we've gotten big wins, small wins, immediate wins. One of the ones that just showed at least the power of this model, and I think what this can do, is the fact that, one, we're not given a lot of the same legal rights that folks in the private market are. So we can't file for an election the same way a Starbucks can, the same way that an Amazon can. We don't have recourse from retaliation in the same way that a lot of these folks are. So if they commit what the National Labor Relations Board calls an unfair labor practice, we don't have any recourse besides filing a federal lawsuit, which is incredibly expensive, incredibly difficult, can be really time consuming. And obviously, especially if you have just been retaliated against, especially if it was termination, you're not in a good position to do that. And I think our employers know that, which is why there aren't many federal lawsuits, especially in the public service here in Colorado. So we've been able to get those wins despite not having those protections. And one of the most immediate ones was at Denver Health, when we announced and went public with our wall-to-wall model there, and that they were joining CWA Local 7799. One of the foundational members there was a paramedic who had been working in the paramedic division for over 20 years, was a senior leader there, and had been given routinely awards for his heroic actions he's done to save lives routinely in the face of his career and job. And because he was one of the faces of this new union effort, he was actually demoted almost overnight. And we saw Denver Health being willing to do that because they know that those protections weren't in place. What they weren't expecting was that we were ready to organize, and that we had not only folks there at Denver Health, but we also had folks at UCW Colorado at the time willing to show up and say, this is unjust, this is not okay, and we have some people power, and we're going to shine some spotlights onto what you just did. And we were able to have a picket line. We were able to make a campaign. He drove an ambulance that was 0070007. So it kind of played with the James Bond theme. And I think it was only 72 hours. We were able to get him reinstated into his old, you know, job classification. And so that was without going to the National Labor Relations Board. That was without filing a federal lawsuit. That was without you know, going through some of those legal recourses that we've been denied, but showing the power that we have as a collective group to really respond to injustice that we see in the workplace. And that really set the tone, I think, for a lot of our ongoing campaigns and how we would respond to even just one of us facing retaliation, because we have a saying in the labor movement that an injury to one of us is an injury to all of us. If they're willing to fire one of us, if they're willing to demote one of us, they're willing to do that to any of us, and they have the power to do that. And it doesn't matter if we are a senior leader, it doesn't matter if we joined yesterday, they will do anything they want and need to really bust the union. And so in order to really stay on top of that, we need to have a vocal, consistently present union that is there to really show up and say, this is something that we're not going to ignore, and that we are watching when you do these unjust actions. And so one of the biggest wins that we recently, that we've gotten, at least in since we founded in 2020, was very recently at the state legislature, where we actually fixed some of those legal problems. It was with Senate Bill 111. We helped sponsor this resolution along with a couple of other unions, the Colorado Education Association, which is the largest union in the state of Colorado, and the Colorado Professional Firefighters Association. To really address that issue that started 90 years ago in the state of Colorado, which excluded public service workers from some of the labor protections that those in the private market get. And so that when we do face that retaliation, yes, we will still be there in the picket line. Yes, we will still be showing up. But we also have the option to click a button on the CDLE website, and instead of filing a lawsuit and going to court over it, and one, union members to feel a lot safer about organizing, speaking up about unjust issues, whether that is about their own working conditions, or as I mentioned, you know, some of these things are about patient safety, about some of the things that we saw during the height of COVID, and some of the things that are not only making us unsafe as workers, but us as unsafe as a community. So that win would not have been possible without building this worker power over time, without not getting brave folks to really show up, to really show that we are a not only a force with inside of our own workplaces, but a force in politics, a force at the state legislature, and really focus on how to change some of these unjust laws, as well as how to fix some of the systemic issues like underfunding of our public institutions in a meaningful way that unfortunately our employers aren't addressing.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. I'm your host, Elise Matatal, and I've been speaking with Jade Kelly, president of CWA 7799, a public workers union comprised of Defenders Union of Colorado, Denver Health Workers United, Denver Public Library Workers United, United Campus Workers Colorado, and Pikes Peak Library Workers United. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Hearing bits and pieces of themes around like solidarity and people power and like addressing systemic things. So I'm curious how like queer and trans liberation are tied into this and tied into labor organizing.
Absolutely. I think in a couple of different ways. And one thing that I've seen is that there is definitely a new labor movement. As I've seen in just organizing and working with other unions across the state, there is a generational divide between some of the folks that are joining and some of the folks that have been here for quite some time. And some of the folks that are joining are really joining not only for, you know, getting a contract and looking to collectively bargain with their employer, which is absolutely one of our primary goals, but they're also joining and organizing for human rights. They're organizing to change some of these systemic issues that exist in our society. And one of those is around queer liberation. And we have done a lot of work as a local to really, you know, dismantle the idea that the idea of queer liberation is separate from the movements to organize labor or even abolish white supremacy. And that these are all really interconnected issues, where that if, you know, queer rights are worker rights, and that in order to feel safe as a queer person in the state of Colorado, you need to feel safe in your workplace. And that requires having protections that work from discrimination, from harassment, that requires having, you know, specific pay requirements that allow us to be able to afford to live and work in our same community, so we're not traveling an hour and a half just to get home. It requires health insurance that actually covers some of our gender-affirming care. It requires a lot of the things that have been pushed off the wayside. And this needs to be front and center, I believe, right now for the labor movement, because this is something that is honestly being challenge not only in the legal system, but in our workplaces. We saw, at least down in Colorado Springs, with one of our newest unions, with Pikes Peak workers at Pikes Peak Library District, that one of their biggest donors is actually focused on the family. And if you're not familiar with them, they are one of the most well-funded anti-LGBTQ organizations in the country. They funnel money into fascist campaigns, fascist candidates, and they are actively working not only to undermine LGBTQ equality, but also worker rights. They're worried about having to respect your pronouns at work. They're worried about having to not having the right to retaliate against queer workers for looking too queer at work. And so this is something that is front and center of my mind, of a lot of our union members' mind. And I think, as we've seen with the new labor movement, is that a lot of our leaders have actually been queer identifying, but these have been the folks who have been not only showing up in these spaces, but I think it's because of that necessity. They're desperate for liberation. They are sick of begging, and they want to build that power in a way that can make it impossible to ignore, and that we can really change these systemic structures. And I think there's a lot of ways to do that in America, but I think one of the most effective is unionizing. We can get involved with a political campaign or a ballot measure. We could speak out at a state legislator, but one of the ways to build long-term real power is worker power in your workplaces. And I think you can do that. And we've seen that, and we've already done that here in the state of Colorado around queer liberation through unions and building that worker power structurally and long-term.
You mentioned the generational differences, and it feels like the timeline of labor organizing has been fraught and had ups and downs in different places in the U.S. I'm curious, I heard a lot of misconceptions about unions and labor organizing over the time that I was in different workplaces. I'm curious if you have any common misconceptions that you hear and things that you say to dispel them.
Yeah, everyone, whenever I tell them the president of a labor union, they think I'm Jimmy Hoffa and I'm like ready to bust out their kneecaps. So I think that I was taught a lot of like pretty terrible anti-union propaganda, that they're, you know, dangerous places, that they're filled with only men, that they are run by the mob. No, they are run by the workers who work there. I work at CU Boulder. I am one of the workers. I am getting paid $0 from the union. I paid to be part of the union. And also that this isn't just some service. I think a lot of people who are not part of the union see it as like, well, the union's not doing anything for me. It's not just a thing you pay union dues into and you immediately get worker rights out of. It is a structure for you to raise concerns. It's a structure for you to work with your coworkers to address your working conditions, as well as issues that are systemic with inside of our state and fight for the public good. And so I have been taught very little about not only how unions work, but even just the history of labor unions in this state. One of my favorite union members from UCW Colorado is Dr. Jim Walsh. He's a professor at CU Denver, and he actually teaches about labor history. For our education committee, he led a session on just some of the past struggles that have been in the state, and just hearing about the unmarked graves that are in Leadville of miners whose, you know, median ages are around 11, 12 years old. And that was in the early 1900s. And they weren't killed by, you know, hoodlums. They were killed by the Colorado National Guard. And that's what we look at when we talk about some of our pioneers and some of our leaders in the labor history. Are they mostly children who were brave enough to stand up and say, I can't survive in these working conditions. My fellow co-workers, my fellow children who have been exploited, we can't survive and we need to stand up. And they were willing to stand up against the Colorado National Guard. And so that has, you know, really reframed some of my context about some of what we've seen as being labeled as being too extreme, of being too outspoken, is that we are standing on the backs of folks who have given their lives to really make sure that we have some of these basic human rights today. And that, you know, not speaking out, allowing some of these rights to be honestly erased or taken away without even a word spoken, is honestly really doing a disservice to those folks. And so learning about that history, honoring that history, repeating that history, making sure that you dispel some of the propaganda that you and I were taught in our classes is really important, because it's a really powerful history and really shows you some of what we're up against and what they were up against and why it's so important that we stay vigilant in the fight for worker rights in the state. Because yes, it unfortunately is not something that has gone away. We've seen, you know, child labor laws erased in Iowa and Arkansas and states across the country without any sort of a strike, without any sort of meaningful response from the labor movement in general. And I think that is honestly heartbreaking, especially once you know the history and some of the lives that were taken because of just some of the struggles to get that law in place in the first place. Even more than that, we've also seen some of the leading corporations today, or even our own employers, break the law. We even sometimes have those protections, but they know that they can either pay the fine, that they won't be fined, that it's worth breaking the law in order to try and bust a union. And so that's why it's so important that even if we do have those legal protections, which we're so glad to be able to pass Senate Bill 111 and get some of those protections, that we stay vigilant, that we stay active, that we stay on the picket line, that we stay right in front of their faces and let them know that as soon as they overstep those lines, as soon as they stop listening to workers who have legitimate concerns, that they work in these workplaces, that keep our public institutions running, they will have the union there organized and calling them out publicly.
That's such an important point about how precarious each of these wins are. And I imagine it's a little bit exhausting to be constantly fighting for things, trying to fight for new things while also holding the line in some ways. I have a value, I think, with activism, we're often fighting against things and not dreaming about the future. I'm curious how you dream about the future. What do you envision? If you had a magic wand and you could fix everything, what would it look like?
Ooh, thank you for the question, because I'm a dreamer. I'm a believer. I want a better world. I'm not looking to fight for the rest of my life by all means. And I think it looks like a complete restructuring of the employer and employee relationship and really having workplace democracy in a meaningful way with inside of our workplaces, allowing the workers themselves to really run our institutions, who actually go in every single day and be able to make the decisions. Because what we've seen is that not only is it folks that are very removed from the situation, but worse than that, it's private institutions like Focus on the Family who are giving large donations to these public institutions saying, we want this policy change. We want to be able to fire LGBTQ workers. We want to be able to fire employees at will because we don't like the color of their shirt, right? We don't want to have to give a reason because that gives us too much of a legal liability. And so we have some big, pretty big enemies that are pretty powerful that have billions of dollars. It's not just, you know, sometimes people think about unions as getting mad at your supervisor. Our enemies are bigger than that. They are quite literally the billionaires that are undermining our public institutions and trying to privatize education, that are trying to privatize healthcare. They're trying to treat our students as customers, trying to make our patients who don't have enough money go out into the streets and die and have no remorse for that. And so many of our teachers, professors, nurses, doctors are in this profession because they care about our community. And I can see that restructuring of that employer-employee relationship doing wonders, not only for, you know, the workers themselves, but our community at large, allowing those doctors, those nurses, those teachers to say what their classroom looks like, what their hospital room looks like, what that care looks like, regardless of your ability to pay, regardless of what, how much money you came from, and what content, you know, the governor of Florida wants you to teach. And so I think that would be my dream. My ideal is allowing true workplace democracy to flourish, where there isn't, you know, an undercurrent of billionaires and corporations undermining our public institutions, piecemealing out our different colleges and schools, piecemealing out our healthcare institutions, raising rates, allowing insurance companies to get in between doctors and patients. It is a complete restructuring of what our public institutions look like and what our work, how our workplaces function.
Oof. So I wish I had so much more time. I feel like I could pick your brain about so many different things. In our last 30 seconds or so, what's one call to action or one thing you want to share with listeners?
Join your union. This isn't going to be something that we can do alone. This is not something that we can do with just a few of us. It's going to require all of us to build a better world. We need a mass mobilization of workers in the state in order to address these issues. And the more people we have, the more we can do. This is not something that's going to be easy or is going to require, or something you can just pay dues to. It is going to require all of us showing up, putting our hands in our pocket and saying, we are not moving until these systemic issues are being addressed. And we can't get to that point until our labor unions are organized, vigilant, and ready to do so. And so that requires joining a union. If you don't have a union in your workplace, start one. Trust me, it is worth it. It actually prevents exhaustion. You mentioned that some of this work sounds exhausting. I feel refreshed. I feel revitalized. I was exhausted when I was watching my coworkers getting laid off. I was exhausted when I saw my students having to drop out because they couldn't afford school anymore. I was exhausted, constantly afraid that I would be fired any day because I talked to my boss the wrong way. Now I have a labor union behind me, and my boss knows that, the university knows that, and we're able to make big changes, not only for myself, but for my students and for my coworkers all across the state. And so please join your union. It'll make your life better, and we need it as a society.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. I'm Elise Matatal, and you just heard my conversation with Jade Kelly, the president of CWA 7799. For more information about CWA 7799 and the State Bill 111 that she referenced, you can visit news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about today's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday, at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, providing you homegrown queer radio every week. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m. right here on KGNU, or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.